power cord. 93.3 KDKB Rocks Arizona AC/DC TNT. And it seems appropriate to welcome, this is sort of a surprise thing, and by surprise I mean I wasn't prepared for it. Our friend Brady over at the Tempe Improv texted me 2 days ago, says, hey, can you, you know, would you mind having Hal Sparks in the studio? You haven't come by for the show? And I went, yeah, sure. You know, I'm just halfway in the what I'm
right.
doing.
And you would have never said yes to it if you were in full faculties.
Had
right.
I known what
sure.
was going on, I
yeah.
would have, no, there's no way Hal Sparks is coming in the studio. I mean,
yeah.
who is he?
Yeah.
Really, I mean, I watch I Love the 70s and I Love the 80s.
Uh-huh.
And quite frankly, don't appreciate what you do on it. No,
well,
I'm kidding.
Yes, you're one of the two.
Yeah, that's the way.
Because you seem like a more of a Michael Ian Black, Moraka kind of a, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
And was
Harris.
That Chelsea Peretti too? That
sure.
other chick?
Yeah. Lonnie Love. I think you got a Lonnie
you think
Love
so?
Vibe
you think
to you.
I've been a Lonnie Love
yeah,
vibe?
Totally.
Excellent. Hal Sparks, welcome to the studios of KDKB.
Thanks.
Welcome to Phoenix.
Thanks. I'm surprised I even got in here walking past all the autographed pictures. It's hard not to like just grab one and run for the door.
Did you see that we actually do have a gold album for Men at Work's Business as Usual?
Well, I think it's in that. Didn't they put that here when they built the building? Isn't that
kind
a foundational
of, yeah.
thing?
It's been here since then.
It's kind of like the capstone on a pyramid. You yeah. just have to. Are you building a radio station? Yes. Great. Do you have the wiring? Yes, I do. Microphones? Good. And the Men at Work gold record? I'm sorry, I can't give you the permit.
No, we're going to have to.
Unless you have that, yeah.
Timely humor, though, because Greg Hamm, flautist for Men at Work, found dead today.
Aw.
Yeah. It wasn't overkill, and I don't think
oh.
it's a mistake.
No.
You're welcome.
It could have been someone knocking at his door.
Oh.
Yeah. That didn't go away.
Now he's officially down under.
Yes.
Stop it.
Oh, it's terrible. They just write themselves.
Certainly.
But, I think it was just... When Dick Clark dies, I mean, there's a layer of rock and roll that is gone forever, and I think the flute is probably any semblance that the flute belongs in rock.
Well, Ian Anderson.
That's what I mean.
Be fair.
I rest my case.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Ian Anderson is the Zamfir of the flute.
That's true.
The actual flute.
Yeah, which makes Zamfir very angry if you bring that up.
It would, yeah, kind of.
Right.
Hal Sparks is in town at the Tempe
yeah.
Improv. You're going to be playing tomorrow and Saturday?
Yeah, Friday and Saturday night. Two shows. It's a good time. Yeah, we're going to party.
Now, most people know you, as I mentioned earlier, from the, I Love the 70s, I Love the 80s. And it's also a well-known fact. You do a lot of, like, when they're doing documentaries on hard rock, heavy metal, stuff
yeah.
like that. You are a huge metalhead. You like Brian Posehn. People
yeah,
don't realize
totally.
that the comic world and the heavy metal world sort of walk hand in hand.
Absolutely. Well, it's kind of the same guys. It's almost like comics are almost the same guys who became rock stars, but with no musical talent initially.
Welcome to radio.
Yeah. Right? Well, you know, that's kind of the ballpark. And Posehn really likes that, like, grindcore-y kind of stuff.
Right.
And I'm more in your, you know, heavy melodic metal, your, Black Label Society to Danko Jones kind of spectrum. You know
wow.
what I mean? I like my, you know, there's a width and breadth to what I like, but I like it. I like singing stuff. I like actual melody. It's
you, you actually yeah. have a band, too. You're not just talking smack.
Yeah, no. I play. My band's called 01. People can check them out at reverbnation.com/01, the word zero, the number one.
Now, is anybody playing any of your music across the nation
yeah,
yet?
Actually. We got airplay. Our new single, American Psycho, is actually playing in the Midwest, so that's why we're actually
touring.
Well,
that touring. Makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, the problem is you don't have three names, though. You know, in order to
yes.
be an American Psycho or a serial killer, you have to have a third name. You
that's
know,
like, a middle name. Yeah. Well, that's have... yeah. When we release the thing, we'll do like I'll be Hal McGee Sparks when
See,
they
that
release.
Works.
Yeah. Right. I'll have to find out all my band members' name because I think my bass player Bumper is
Bumper.
That might be his middle name, but
Bumper,
we don't really know.
When did that name come out? Do you think Mr. and Mrs. Bumper were just sitting there in the ward going, "What should we call? What shall we call
right.
the young
yeah,
lad?"
Right. Yeah. He was born in a pool table on a pool table or something. You know, like, yeah.
He was named after his mom.
Yeah. She was bowling and she gave birth and she was not a particularly good bowler, so they had the inflatables in the gutters and they just named him after it.
Did you just compare your bass player Bumper's mother to gutters?
Yes, I did.
That was not nice.
Well, if you knew Bumper, he would do the same. but yeah, and yeah, I think we'll have to do that. And I noticed, by the way, your choice of photographs over here with the Beatles, the workers, and then
Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah.
See,
it's when they announce your middle name that you're in trouble,
right? That's what your mom did.
Yes.
Right.
Right. The FBI is basically a big extension of your mom, Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah, let me ask you personally, what's your middle name?
McGee.
So
it's true. Yeah.
Hey, your mother, Hal McGee Sparks.
Yes.
Like, uh oh.
Yeah. Right.
Oh no, I'm in trouble.
I got to go in, guys.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Can we play some of your music? I actually want to play this because because everybody in radio wishes they were in a band.
Right.
And everybody in comedy wishes they were in radio or in a band.
Right.
And stuff like that. So you have an opportunity to, you've done television, you're doing radio now.
Yeah.
You do comedy very well, Tempe Improv, starting tomorrow and Saturday. I want to play something from your band. Can I play? I'm looking at the list of songs that are up here on the page.
Yeah.
You suggested Mad Season. I'm looking at your cover of Shock Me as well.
Do Shock Me. Fire that up.
Can I really?
Yeah, of course.
All right, cool.
This is me playing guitar and singing on this, so I'm not, this is no filler, you know, it's.
Really?
And I actually laid down bass on this particular version.
So you're like the Trent Reznor of,
in this particular run of it. Yeah, yeah.
All right, excellent. Here's Hal Sparks, you know, the guy that you see on I Love the 70s and the 80s, and he's stand-up comic and film actor, and apparently now Ace Frehley impersonator.
Yeah.
It's 93.3 KDKB. Check this out. You didn't do the fade or anything like that. You ended it cold.
I believe in ending a song. That's one of my pet peeves in rock, is I hate fades. I can't stand when a band just goes, it's basically over at this point. And you could tell it was the label, like the band's having a lot of fun in the studio.
Right.
And the label goes, They just go, we need this at 4 minutes,
12 seconds. Or you're paying by the hour, yeah.
Right, and they just start fading it down, you know. Occasionally you have the band fade up when they actually did come to an ending, and then they just splice it together in the black spot between the two, you know.
Well, this is where you, as a KISS fan, and by the way, we're speaking with Hal Sparks here at 93.3 KDKB. Welcome him into the Tempe Autoplex Studios. You're in town at the Tempe Improv tomorrow and Saturday. Big KISS fan are you,
yeah.
And of course you are now referencing, and that is the I Love It Loud fade out and fade back
in.
Where everybody did, they just sort of reconnected it.
Yeah, and other bands have done that as well, but I've always had a pet peeve, like, end your song, write an ending. Even if it's a trail off, write it as a trail off, almost like you do it with a volume.
Yeah, but you didn't even finish the measure there. You were like halfway through the measure, and you just went,
no, I yell shock me at the end.
And that's your ending.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I'm not criticizing.
Live, it's awesome.
I'm sure it's awesome. Your band is called 01, by the way.
Yes, the word zero and the number one. My name's Hal, and it comes from 2001, A Space Odyssey. I was named after the computer in 2001.
Were you really?
Yeah, my mom read the book the year before I was born.
Really? So yeah. Did everybody make that joke? What are you doing, Hal? Did everybody make that joke?
Yeah,
when you were a kid?
I grew up in Kentucky, and nobody saw that movie there or read that book. You know, like, it was too hippie and too smart for where I was. Everybody was like, what the hell? Every time somebody stubbed their toe, you got to turn around, man.
The worst part about it is it's tough. When your name is Zeke, Trey, or Bubba, you are in no position to throw stones.
That's true. Absolutely.
Right. So
when you can't actually remember your real first name and you're going, you know.
Junior.
Yeah, right. Junior.
Junior for what? No, Junior. No, that's my name. Junior.
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 He called Cockeyed Junior.
There you
Cockeyed.
Go. So what else is going on in the world of Hal Sparks? I know you're in town doing stand-up, and I don't think of you as a stand-up comic because I'm so used to seeing you on television doing other things.
Well, that's where I started. That's why I did Talk Soup. I got, you know, they really trolled stand-ups to host that show, and that was my sort of breakthrough moment. The problem with, you know, with being in Hollywood or being on television is the minute you do something, they forget you do everything else.
Right.
And if I'm, like, touring, we start with the tour with the band. This is my last stand-up date before I go on tour with the band.
And you're going on tour.
Yeah.
See, I hate you. You're one of those guys that was able to do television, able to do, obviously, stand-up comedy. You've been in a couple of films. You've done a couple that you're considered an expert in hard rock and heavy metal. They actually go to you instead of the radio guy when they're doing a documentary and stuff.
Sorry.
And now you get to go out on tour,
and
I sit here and press play on your music.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Wow.
Sorry. Yeah. It's just there. It's a lesson in life isn't fair.
I hate you.
I'll remember that when I'm in Escanaba, Michigan, going, are we in Ed Gein's house? We are literally playing in a couple of these places. We're playing a pool hall, and we're playing an ice rink, and I just love that idea. We're playing the Rhinelander ice rink in Wisconsin.
Really? And Wisconsin in April, so the snow won't be too bad.
May, yeah. Well, actually, it's in 2 weeks. So it's ridiculous. I mean, we're playing, it's this thawed out ice rink that they make a concert venue, so all the, you know, rednecks can come up there and dirty up the place so that they have to, I don't know, shave it every season before.
See, now I notice you call them rednecks because they're up there listening there, and you're in Arizona right now, and there's a very little chance, a slight chance that they might be listening
online.
No, I
call them rednecks there, too. I'm from the South, so I'm allowed.
You can get away with that?
Yeah.
You get the pass.
You know this is not the South. This is the West.
And I know where we are.
Yeah, I know. But everybody screws that up. I don't know if you've noticed, but like if you drive 15 miles outside of this city in any direction, it will be or
it's the water boy no matter what.
Yeah, exactly. And so we'll be in Escanaba, Michigan, and I didn't even know Escanaba, Michigan is in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. We always think of Michigan as the big mitten, right? That's the shape of the state. There's a whole chunk of it that's up to the left, kind of like a little offbeat Alaskan. You have to drive through, I kid you not, Sheboygan, Michigan.
Sheboygan.
That's where the bridge is. Mm-hmm. It takes you up to the Upper Peninsula across the lake, and it's like a, you know, whatever, a 20-mile bridge or something ridiculous, and you're in nowhere. You're in like a Twilight Zone episode, like where the road loops back on itself or some weird Inception joyride, and then there's like the trees part, and you're in this rock venue that everybody loves to play in Escanaba, Michigan, and I have no idea why, but it's awesome.
What I love is that Escanaba and Sheboygan are both words that you can say drunk.
That's true.
Right. And you have to drink a lot if you live there.
Probably drunk when they came up with them.
Right.
You know what I mean? Midwesterners, let's be honest. The Quitter region. These are the people, the Great Push West went, screw it, you guys go ahead.
Just so you know, a lot of people from Chicago have relocated to the Valley.
Oh,
I'm just saying.
I went to high school in Chicago.
Oh, well, so there you go.
See?
Look at you.
I got my bases covered.
You're a world traveler.
I'm an insider. Right? I talk about this from the inside out. I have an excuse for everything. It's great. And I can justify everything, which is even better. But, yeah, it's an awesome thing to be actually going on the road with the band and touring, and that's it, just in a van doing it. Now, when I say van, it's a Dodge Sprinter van. It looks like we're carrying big plates of glass. It's like tall.
Do you have like the little trailer behind you carrying all your gear?
No. We have our label guy driving an SUV with some extra stuff in the back, because if anything doesn't fit, like all the merch will go in his trunk, and he'll be tooling around behind us going, "Guys, wait up," because he sounds like that. And he'll be our merch dude.
Do you have time to hang around for a while?
Yeah, of course.
All right, let's get some commercials out, and then I want to play another song from Zero
One,
because I want to hear what you do. Anybody can play a Kiss cover. Just ask Kiss.
Yeah. Oh, ouch.
Too soon?
That was nice.
All right, thanks.
Schmonty.
93.3 KDKB Rocks Arizona, Alice in Chains, Rooster. Now, you're an Alice in Chains fan. Are you not House Bunch?
I am, absolutely.
How do you feel about the William Duvall Alice in Chains?
I think it's a great necessity, and I thought they probably did the transition from their singer passing away and dealing with it really emotionally for as long as they did.
Right.
And then transitioning into, we're going to try to put this band back together with another singer. We're going to get a guy who sounds ballpark. It's not going to ruin your sonic experience. When bands try to go take a total left turn and get somebody else,
John Corabi.
Yeah, John Corabi's a great example.
Yeah.
That's a horrible mistake to make. Same thing with Skid Row. They grabbed a guy after Sebastian left, and I forget his name off the top of my head. But
Johnny Solinger.
Yeah, Johnny Solinger. And he just didn't sound like it. He couldn't, and you can't carry those songs. There's such a wide...
Yeah, but Van Halen pulled it off.
I agree, but they actually went to a guy who had more... arguably physical ability as a singer than the guy they had, so he could do everything that guy could do plus new songs and a new sound and yada yada. This situation, I thought it was interesting that they toured for a while and had big singers come out and just do the set with them or do a few songs as Alice in Chains, but it was Hetfield came out and did some songs with
them. I thought Anselmo sucked when he did that.
I agree.
I thought when he came out, I thought he was terrible.
I agree, but for the band, I thought it was a great way to do it.
Right.
Because it was almost like a reset button for the fans, like a recognition that we're still a band, we still want to make music together, and we still are in that process, but we're dealing with the fact that we lost Lane, and we're we've mourned, now we're ready to get back to where we were. And I don't think you have to rename the band in that situation. I think, especially because Cantrell, look at the Rooster, like there's so many of those songs that are his,
right,
that were, and big ones. I mean, Lane, who I'm a huge fan of, and vocally... learned so much from. I learned how to protect my voice by listening to Lane Staley sing.
Right.
I once saw him do an entire show squatting in the middle of the stage with the mic pointed directly down his gullet, essentially just arms locked, singing straight into it, because apparently he was either too high to stand.
I was just going
to
say, he was incapable of standing?
Yeah. But he just squatted dead center in the stage the whole show that way. Didn't move. Whole show. It was almost like a test. Like when people hang themselves from the ceiling, it was incredible to watch. But he sounded perfect, and I'm a fan of Cantrell's writing, so I think do what you Here's the thing: it's interesting. You brought up the Kiss thing about swapping out members,
right?
And being pissed about it. Here's the thing: Ace signed off on a swapped out member when he allowed other guys to basically cover his solos for him on Love Gun and other albums. So I would have Peter walked in a fit of ego, thinking that Beth was his ticket to ride and screw everybody else. If they hadn't done it that way, I would have been a lot less sympathetic to how they're doing the band now. I'm totally sympathetic to how they're doing the band now because those guys did it that way, and it was 27 years ago or whatever.
But don't you feel, and by the way, just for those of us that are joining us, it's Hal Sparks, who you know from Talk Soup, Queer as Folk, I Love the 70s, I Love the 80s, and a whole bunch of other things. And he's a huge rock fan.
Yeah.
So we thought we would invite him in here to the Tempe Autoplex Studios here in Mesa. He's going to be at the Tempe Improv tomorrow and Saturday. But we've been talking off the air, well, on the air, but while you've been listening to Alice in Chains stuff about a variety of different musical things, you're like a huge encyclopedia of music and a huge Kiss fan. Yeah. I'm a huge Kiss fan.
Yeah.
And we could go on, I think, all afternoon on this.
Totally.
I want to get into something that's absolutely timely right now. Your thoughts on Axl in the Hall of Fame.
Here's the thing. You can't make waves right now by playing along in any area, in any arena.
Right.
Kanye West is a good example of that. I think a lot of people, if you play by the rules, if you just go up and wave and go, "Oh, we're giving you an award," and you take it, you will get no bump from it whatsoever. Publicity-wise, there's no fan value necessarily. They're going to put him in whether he likes it or not. So arguably, it is either a completely mercenary publicity choice to tell him to go pound sand and not do it, or it's him being genuinely Axl. Both are okay with me because the guy's got a, you know, got rent to pay, arguably. And apparently the sets have been great. Like he's been touring and
right.
I mean, Chinese Democracy is a joke. I can't tell you how livid I was that, you know, believe me, bad albums I have no problem with. Bad albums that take 12, 15 years to produce, I get very angry. You know what I mean?
If $17 million.
Yeah,
dollars.
What's that rule? You can have it quick, cheap, and easy, or quick, cheap, and good. But you can only have two at a time.
Right.
You can have cheap and good, but you won't be quick. That kind of. Okay. This was all of the above. This was like crap. Took a long time and not interesting. It was basically a knockoff Linkin Park album. It was when it sounded like a guy trying to chase the musical trends of the time and catch up,
right.
Which is exactly the opposite of where he should have been. You know, he should have just made the music he made and sat with it. But a lot of guys didn't have the guts to do that. A lot of bands, you know, don't soldier through that period of their career very well.
Well, you're about to learn this anyway because you have your own band called 01. Now, you're not signed to a major label, are you?
No, we're on Rocket Science Red. We're distributed through Sony, so
right.
We're doing okay.
But yeah. they're not dictating what kind of music
not
you make.
Not at all.
See, I think Axl, when you start to, the bar is set to such a level that people forget that this is a music business. You put somebody out there that's Guns N' Roses, there's an expectation. This thing had better be this, 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 and this. We better have four singles on it and be able to go double platinum within the first 3 weeks of it being out. Or it's a dollar at Best Buy.
Yeah.
Which is eventually what happened.
Right. But I think that was an emotional, like a clutch reflex on his part that caused it. Because I bet you anything that right after the whole November Rain piano, you know, Elton John moment of his career, he went to the studio afterwards, either with the guys or without, and started cranking out songs on pen, you know, just the original jotted ideas, the ones that would have come right out of him at that period, would have held strong, probably, if he hadn't second-guessed them and started going, we're stuck in grunge now, how do I incorporate, maybe people aren't buying. I see that happen to so many bands,
right,
where they start chasing what's happening now. Well, what's happening now was recorded 2 years ago. And what's going to be a hit and the energy and the music that's coming out in 2 years, trend-wise, that's being recorded right now doesn't sound like the stuff that's on the radio right now. It's people trying to get, you know, there's natural waves of it. If you're trying to chase what's on the air right now, you'll be 2 years behind the times no matter what. So it's arguably better to just be 6 to 10 years behind the times, crank out albums, let everybody catch up. In 10 years, they're going to be back to going, remember that awesome album? I want that album so bad. And they'll download it. And then they'll go, wow, he's put out 3 other albums. And they'll go buy it. And it sounds like the album they just like, they like now, or the first album. And I find a lot of rock bands, that's why a lot of hair bands are actually doing fairly well, because they skipped a lot of that period, or, you know, like Tesla or anybody else, they put out albums that were in the ballpark,
right?
And once they get an album that's good again, then you go back and buy the other three, and you're like, oh wow, it's like I've discovered, it's like a 5-album release, you know, because you weren't keeping track. I just think I think it was a smart move, arguably, on a publicity level,
right?
Because so what? We're playing Cleveland in a couple of weeks. I've been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think it's kind of cool. I don't think it belongs there. I don't know why. Or it's almost like that entire town floats on a Spinal Tap quote now.
Right.
There's no industry to speak of. Downtown blows. I mean, it's unfortunate. My uncle's a retired FBI there, and my cousin is a U.S. Marshal. They live there. Like, I've been going to Cleveland my whole life.
Well, see, that's why you can badmouth the town, because you're protected.
Yeah, and I'm heavily protected. But, and everybody there will tell you that the only thing they've got right now is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they're so coy about it.
Well, they have the Browns.
Yeah, right.
And the Indians.
Yeah, which is great.
And the Cavs.
Uh-huh, right. And the decrepit buildings.
And a river that's flammable.
Right. Which is actually the most rock and roll part of it. I think every time they induct somebody into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, they should have to set the river on fire. They should be able to go. It's like the lighting of the river. Now, for the traditional lighting of the river. Keith Richards, you get to do the honors. And they give you a big torch, and everybody goes, yeah! And you go, and the whole thing lights up. That would be sick. Wouldn't that be awesome?
It would be great. But I think they should have to arrange the flammable substance in the logo of the band.
See, that's too much work. I think they should actually just have
it's a union shop.
Totally. They should have a big Viking funeral pyre in the middle of it that goes up, and it will have the albums of whomever you don't like. So as a rock and roll inductee, you can go, you know what? Who I always hated?
Screw these guys.
Christopher Cross. I can't take it. And then, you know, you get to burn a pile of Christopher Cross records.
Outstanding. Hal Sparks is in town. He's going to be at the Tempe Improv. We welcome him in here. Now, here's what I'm going to do, because we are a music station. And ironically, or coincidentally, actually, you are a musician.
Yeah.
Not just the guy that loves rock, not just the guy that can act and can do stand-up comedy and can write and can perform and pretty much a jack of all trades. You actually sing and play guitar in your own band, mm-hmm. Zero One.
Yeah.
Can we play another song from your... You can find this at... What's the website?
ReverbNation.com/01. It's like a fan site. It's way better than even having a web, like a regular website. Like,
it looks like MySpace, to be honest with you.
Yeah. They retooled
it. But not as annoying.
Yes. And much more useful. And you can build street teams and all that kind of stuff. It's just way more useful. It's an EPK is what it is. And that was so hard for bands to put together. And now you can do it online. It's awesome.
All right. Here's Hal Sparks on vocals and lead guitar, rhythm guitar.
Both.
Both.
In this case, yeah.
His band is called Zero One. The song is called Mad Season on 93.3 KDKB. KDKB Rocks Arizona. There you go. Hal Sparks, the rock musician in his band Zero One, as we welcome Hal into the Tempe Autoplex studios here in Mesa. Hal's in town doing stand-up over at the Tempe Improv. Now, knowing you for the brief period that I've known you, and of course knowing you exponentially on television or once removed, you are a really, really intelligent guy and a well-spoken guy. I don't see you as being one of those comics. You're not like the kind of comic that Fred Armisen portrays in Portlandia. Are you know that sort of way too intelligent
no,
for the room kind of guy?
Well, no, not necessarily. I think you know, in comedy specifically, it's about whatever the job is. Stand-up is interesting because sometimes people ask you, what do you like better, acting, music,
right.
stand-up, whatever. They're so fundamentally different. But stand-up is one of the only art forms where there's only really one proper response from the audience. Laughter. That's
right.
It. You go see a band, you can dance or stand still or bop your head or whatever, and you're still getting the show. You just absorb it however you want to absorb it. And the band can't go, well, that guy just stood there and stared, and this guy's dancing like a freak. That guy likes the show, this guy doesn't, because it's not necessarily indicative. They both could be loving it, and the guy flipping his head around could just be high, and the guy staring could be the biggest fan you'll ever have. So it's so variant. Whereas, as a stand-up, I have to make you laugh. And my rule is, as long as I make you laugh, I can say anything I want. I can talk about whatever I want.
Right.
There's a lot of science and math and philosophy and futurism in
right.
my show. Because I try to look at what people aren't joking about. Because
right.
a lot of people will recover the same topics a lot of different ways. The only reason I will ever cover a topic that I find other comics doing is because they haven't done it right yet.
Right.
Or they're off on another tack. I'm like my non-smoker bit that's on Charmageddon, my special that gets a lot of play. I wrote that bit because of Doug Stanhope and Bill Hicks, whom I'm a huge fan of.
Right.
But they use the term non-smoker all the time, and I think that's a made-up word. That's not fair. You smoke, I don't. You can't label me based on what you don't do or what I don't do. You
right.
do that. You're a smoker. I breathe. End of conversation. That's the bit. That's the root of it. That's the only time I'll cover that kind of ground again, you know.
Right.
Everything else, I'm like, what do we deal with that we're not dealing with yet? You know, where are we headed? You know, and so my act these days seems to be like straight from the pages of Wired, you know, magazine or something, which is hip and fun and sciencey and smart or whatever. And I just like the conversation. I think as a comic, you're a BS detector. You have to call BS when you see it, and that's the other job. And as long as I can do those things and make you laugh, and most of the time it's by being physically stupid, because I run around like a psychopath.
So you do a lot of physical comedy?
Yeah, a lot of physical stuff. Because I think that balances it. You can talk about a lot of stuff if you'll goof it up. And Carlin was one of those guys. Carlin would do a lot of odd physical behavior-y stuff
right.
to counterbalance the depth of what he was doing, you know. And I my writing style and you know, he's the main guy I guess I would style-wise cop from. And I what I tried to do when I was a kid, I started doing stand-up when I was 15. My two big influences were Steve Martin and George Carlin. I loved
sure.
Richard Pryor, I loved Woody Allen, I loved Godfrey Cambridge and Shelley Berman and all these guys from the 60s, because my dad had an old crate of comedy records from
right.
the 60s that I would listen to. But those were the main guys, Steve Martin and George Carlin. And they seemed to be two different divergent things. And to me, it was like, how do you fuse those guys, the two things I love the most about stand-up, the abstract metaphysical goofiness of Steve Martin and the heady, just intricate writing of George Carlin. And that's kind of where I set out. At 15 years old, I was like, this, if I can do that.
Well, it's then. At least you set reasonable goals. I mean, they're arguably two of the greatest stand-ups in the history of the
right.
sport.
And you should not, aim for less than that. I
right.
don't get that either. I don't get, you know, I don't know where the band will be in a year or a couple of years, but I'm not doing shows as if, oh, this is cool, we'll just do this. I'm doing shows as if, well, this could be a bigger space. This is a bigger arena. I'm building stage props myself by hand. I'm screen printing our own band shirts and stuff like that, but it's because I own that act. When I do that, that's all I do. When I do stand-up, that's all I do. I don't play guitar on stage. I don't necessarily sing or do any kind of referential stuff. I certainly don't talk about Hollywood, which drives me crazy when guys do. You know, I was at a party and I ran into Jack Nicholson.
See, we have something here for that. We call that the name drop. That's when you
go ahead.
Anytime you hear somebody just start dropping names needlessly.
Yeah,
yeah, we
that's,
do that.
Yeah, that's brutal to me. That's because you can't relate as an audience member. I always felt like I just do, and that's where I learned from Kiss, was do the show you want to see.
Right.
Play the show you want to see. Tell the jokes you'd want to hear. And so that's what I do. And I wouldn't want to sit in the audience and go, oh, cool, that guy met Oprah. Like, who cares?
Right.
Tell me as a viewer what you think of Oprah, maybe, because you and I would be sitting on a couch thinking the same thing, talking about stuff. That makes sense to me. That's, you know, that's the unifying aspect of stand-up.
So did you have a chance to meet Steve Martin?
I did.
Did he give you the card?
Huh?
Did he give you the card?
No, he didn't. This was different because I met
him. For those people that don't know what this is,
yeah.
Steve Martin doesn't sign autographs.
No.
If you meet Steve Martin, he will, you know, be very pleasant, hi, nice to meet you and stuff, and he pulls a business card out of his jacket and says, congratulations, you've just met Steve Martin.
Yeah.
You didn't get the card.
No, but
see, I would kill for the card.
I would too. But it happened after, you know, when he knew who I was. It happened when I was on Talk Soup, and Talk Soup. He had it was really kind of awesome. There was a quote on the in the paper that Steve Martin said, "Irony in America lives and dies on Talk Soup right now," because he'd been
nice.
Watching my stint on.
How great
it, and,
is
like,
that?
It was amazing. And two of the guys who were writers at the time thought he was insulting the show, and I'm like, you know, I'm like, oh my god, really? You don't understand? What you're... So. I go to the Comedy Awards. Remember when they had those for a couple of years?
Right.
So I go to the Comedy Awards, and Steve Martin is there. Gave one of the greatest acceptance speeches you've ever seen. And he's sitting at a table, two tables over. And everybody's like, "There's." It's, and by the way, now I'm doing what I said I wouldn't do, but
yeah,
I don't do it on stage.
Yeah, it's all right. It's you're not on stage.
Okay.
Clock's not running.
Yeah. So we're, but you can do the name. So Steve Martin's sitting right. Two tables away.
There you go.
Next to Gary Shandling.
And with whom else?
Carrot Top was bringing me bread rolls.
I'm sorry.
That didn't
have to no, a person has to be famous.
Nice.
Person,
ouch.
We'll give you this one.
That works.
I'm sorry. That's not the answer we were looking for.
No, that's fine. Right. So anyways, I'm like, I have to go say hi to Steve Martin. I've been a fan since I was 7 years old. I got to go. And everybody at the table said, don't go say it. He's very shy. He's very introverted. He won't say anything. You'll be very disappointed. Don't go over and say hi. And I have to. It's a life experience thing. And,
sure.
You know, my mom would kill me.
You'll never get this opportunity again.
Right, yeah. So I get up, and everybody's like, they're literally like grabbing me by the shirt collar. Like, don't. And I went,
Well, he knows who you are, obviously, because
yes,
he made a reference
it,
to, the,
right.
to the show.
That was my justification. So I go over, and everybody's going, he's not going to say a word. He'll say hi or whatever and shake his hand. I'm like, that's fine. If that's all he does, that's cool. I get to at least say that. Okay, so I go over. I go, hi, Steve, my name's Hal Sparks. I host. And he goes, blah, 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 blah. And he starts jabbering on about the show and about all kinds of stuff. At least I think that's what he said, because I was so expecting him not to talk that I had those disassociative moments where I was outside of my body going, Steve Martin is talking to me. Just nod, moron. He's going to think you're being rude, because I was staring. I didn't hear a word he said. I could not tell you to this day a single word that he said other than hi. And we talked for 3 minutes, because the whole time I'm going, oh my god, I'm talking to Steve Martin. Steve Martin is talking to me, and he's talking a lot, and he's not shutting up. I actually can't get a word in edgewise. I couldn't respond if I wanted to. And then my brain's going, listen, just listen to him. Don't say anything. Stop listening to yourself and just tell you. I literally just fighting going on in my head. But he turned out to be a gracious, very smart, and a joy to talk to. Insofar as I know.
Yeah, as far as you can recall.
And the ironic part of that, I suppose, is that he bought two banjos from my dad when I was...
Your dad's a banjo salesman?
My dad had the famous old-time music company in Cincinnati, Ohio, and at one point was the only licensed Martin repair guitar guy in the country. So
oh, no kidding.
All these old bluegrass guys...
So you don't
guys,
come from any money whatsoever?
No, we don't.
Oh, I forgot, you're from Kentucky.
Yeah, no. And most of the fixing he did for free, but at one point the Martin factory burned down. So if you wanted your guitar fixed under warranty, I guess, you had to go to my dad's shop. So these guys started parading through, and he became friends with like Vince Gill.
I guess Vince Gill is
country
he's
music
famous.
Yeah. And Alice Cooper bought a mandolin from my dad.
Here we go. You gotta give it. And not here's once removed, Alice Cooper has keys to this radio station.
Really?
Yeah, he does a radio show. It's on another radio station now that our company owns.
Uh-huh.
But he started out doing his station.
And you can't ask for the keys back.
No, we won't ask for the
keys.
No. He's got one of those electronic key fob things that get you through the security door.
Yeah.
So if Alice decides he wants to come by the radio station, he just pulls up in his badass vehicle, just whips out his keys, bing, he gets
That's
in. It's like
genius.
And everybody's like, hey, Alice is here.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
That's fantastic.
You bet you just go, what'd you do at work today? Oh, Alice came in.
Yeah.
So you're talking like Alice Cooper, like he's your buddy.
Right.
He's not. It's like the Steve Martin moment.
Yeah, you're like,
stand
there with your hands on the glass.
Yeah. Oh, there he is. Nah, it's an awesome moment.
Yeah. So that was a huge, and I met Carlin in a similar situation. I snuck into the Aspen Comedy Festival because I auditioned for 3 years and they wouldn't let me in. And by the way, the same people who wouldn't let me audition, like, I auditioned for the thing. They wouldn't let me into the Aspen Comedy Festival. It was like, he's a no talent. No, nothing original about this guy. That was the big quote or whatever. Those
right.
people like flip burgers now, and I got a show a year later, and it's just kind
of
tells
that you're not
you to
bitter.
Hang in there. No, I mean, it's good. Like it's almost like don't let those people get you down.
Sure.
Because they don't know what they're talking about ever. And so I'm there. They're shuffling George, who is actually a very small guy.
Right.
Through.
And when was this? Because he was also, he got pretty frail near the end too.
This was years ago. This was in 96.
Oh, okay. So yeah. He was still relatively spry.
He was spry. He was doing, and he did a lecture. It was great. So I went to the lecture, and I snuck out this other door and walked around the back, and they were shuffling him out the back way. And we both got kind of stuck in this little cul-de-sac where the elevator was because the people were coming through, and they wanted to keep him away from them while they walked by to get him to the green room. And so here I am standing there with George, trapped in a door well, silent.
Oh, yeah.
What do I say?
what do you say to George Carlin?
Right. And I said the dumb thing that everybody says. Is like, George, you're my single biggest influence, and I know you don't want to be bothered, but if you have any advice, it would be a joy to hear it. And he said, write everything down. That was it. And I carry my iPad with me, and it has copious notes in it. I use Evernote so that it links to all my computers. But for years, I just did all this. Like, I'd write notes on everything, notebooks everywhere. And Richard Jenny actually taught me the best thing about notes. Remember Richard Jenny? Richard Jenny passed away.
I love Richard Jenny.
Richard
Jenny
was such
a
funny guy. He used to have this thing where he'd have these buckets inside his door, in his bedroom and in his house. And when he walked through, he would just throw napkins of whatever he had written jokes on in those things. And then he and his writing partner, who was more of an editor, would gather the buckets together every week, and they would just pull stuff out, and they would make notes and write stuff and rearrange them. And that's how he wrote these big, long-drawn pieces, which are amazing.
We could do this all afternoon.
We could. Sorry.
I got to play some commercials.
Right. Sorry about that.
Let me get the commercials out of the way. Hal Sparks joins us here at 93.3 KDKB. And if you want to hang, you can hang.
Yeah.
And if you don't, that's fine, too.
Yeah, my girlfriend's waiting out there or whatever. She's busy on her phone.
So oh, by the way, let's just get this taken care of right now.
Yeah.
All of you, anybody, you are on Queer as Folk. You are not gay.
Yeah, sorry.
Hal Sparks, not gay. I can attest that he has what we would like to call, with all due respect, a POA waiting for him. A personal outside
assistant.
Yeah,
right.
Observational assistant. She is absolutely fantastically beautiful. So those of you that are attracted to Hal Sparks and are suppressing your homoerotic fantasies, I've got bad news for you.
It's sad.
Hal, not gay.
However, I will be in D.C. for the unveiling of a new Social Security bill to provide Social Security benefits to married gay couples next week. So I'm definitely a P-flag person.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that at all.
I'm a big supporter of the community.
All right, let's get Hal back here after a couple minutes on 93.3 KDKB.
Hey, it's Pat. I can't get to the phone. Actually, by now, I should be somewhere near Amarillo. Yep, my Toyota gets such great gas mileage. I'm taking her out for a little road trip to see how far I can get on one tank of the old Texas tea. Huh, if they call oil Texas tea, what do they call tea? Texas oil? I'd like a tall glass of Texas oil with a lemon wedge.
KDKB Rocks, Arizona. Puddle of mud, drift and die. Still in the studios here, the Tempe Autoplex Studios with Hal Sparks. You've been here like an hour.
Yeah, I jabber. That's what I do.
You're getting the evil eye.
Yeah, I know. Oh,
really?
Not really.
Really? Is that what we're going to do?
Yeah.
That was woefully. Hold on a second. I have something for that, too.
How very inappropriate. Thank you.
Yeah.
Can I give you that again?
How very inappropriate. Thank you.
There you go.
My girlfriend just kicked her leg off really straight because we're both starving. So she,
She's you can't hear any of that stuff. Yeah, but she kicked her leg up, and I got a view that only you get.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was just, and good for you.
Yeah, she dances in Vegas. She's a,
really?
Like, big show dancer, like.
Yeah, so she's a dancer, not.
A dancer.
A dancer.
She works for, we met when I did a show called Celebracadabra for VH1, and she was in a magic show there, this guy Steve Weirich.
Oh, no kidding.
Who's terrible.
But he's a terrible magician. Yeah, but he did, you know.
But he had a great show.
Introduce you to.
Here's the thing, and this is, people know this, I'm sure. The small stuff is where magic lies. If you can do hand manipulation, prestidigitation, which is the stuff I like to do and what I learned on that show.
Do you do magic?
Yeah, I've done it since. And
Jesus Christ, what don't you do?
Well, how much time do you have to waste not learning to cool stuff? Why wouldn't you want to learn magic?
How long is your set? Like an hour, hour and 15 minutes?
Yeah, but I don't do any of that.
So you've got 23 other hours of the day to fill.
Yeah, exactly.
Good for you.
Yeah. So I do. So anyways, I did his show. But the big box magicians, the guys who make helicopters appear and disappear,
right.
We all know that they're waving at something, and there's a bunch of technicians running around disassembling a car or whatever the hell to make it appear and disappear.
Right.
I could teach you how to do that in an afternoon.
Really?
I really could.
So David Blaine is not impressive?
No, Blaine's impressive stuff is his hand stuff.
Right.
And even Chris Angel, when he can do some close-up stuff when he's near you and he makes it look like he's levitating, that's very cool. Once you get to the point where flames are coming out of my hands, all right, no, they're not. And we all know they're not, and you're not doing anything to make them. That's a rigging, and it's great, but Kiss has flame pots on stage. It's not. I'm not in my mind going, oh my God.
Yeah, but Gene is spitting fire.
Fire just. Yeah, exactly.
And he is spitting fire.
It is a legit. That's the cool part. See
that's
what I mean?
The trick. Yeah.
Yes. So if you can do this, the spitting fire, that's way cooler than just having the flame pots. You know.
Right.
So and the same thing with magic. So anyway, she dances in those kind of shows, and she does the trick. So in those tricks,
did you just say your girlfriend does tricks?
Simmer down. Bottom line, I will. But she's one of those people who can like disappear in a second, like they do the trick, and she's doing all the work. She's basically you know, you get chopped up or you get, you know.
And she knows how to do all that stuff. So she's got the secrets.
Yes, and she's way, you know, while the magician is just kind of waving his hands at the box while it happens, she's the one actually making it happen.
Now, should she not, like, she should take all that skill and become a female magician. Like,
I've been telling her that
for
years.
Be the one, like she could get bank because
she totally could.
Nobody, I mean, name me a female magician right now.
Right. I couldn't. There's like a Chinese one who's very famous in Asia and tours all over, but I couldn't tell you her name, but she's huge.
Right.
But not here, not in the West.
She could be Doug Henning without a mustache.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Or well, with straight hair, too. She's
right. Yeah. So there's that, too. So
Doug Henning with no mustache and a flat iron and better teeth. And a more manly speaking voice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Slightly. Did you just call your girlfriend manly?
No, I just...
You're not doing well here.
I just inferred that Doug Henning was
somewhat effeminate.
Yeah, well, that it was less manly, not necessarily effeminate. I don't think they qualify. One, you know, it's not... plus or minus 50. You could be completely off the charts in your own area.
We were also talking about, by the way, Hal Sparks is joining us here in the Tempe Autoplex Studios. You're at the Tempe Improv tomorrow and Saturday, and I know you guys are hungry, and I'm going to let you out of here, but we're talking about so much stuff. You ride motorcycles, too?
Yeah,
You don't look like a motorcycle guy.
I don't know what that means, but
well,
I guess
well, you don't look like
I'm not wearing
a dirt bag.
Currently?
No, you don't look like a dirt bag.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
You don't look like a dirt bag.
Well, I'm not,
sport bike or cruiser?
Cruiser. I ride a Honda Fury 1300.
Right.
I started on a Shadow Phantom.
So you're a Honda guy?
Yeah. Yeah, so I actually ride for Honda. I ride the.
Do you really?
Yeah, I'm like one of their promo riders essentially. But I get loaner bikes to ride, which are awesome. And I started riding the Fury, and I just fell in love with it because it's. I mean, I remember when I first started riding, I looked at the Shadow, and it's like a 700 pound bike. You know, it's a little low rider kind of thing. And I was like, that's a lot of bike. Because I used to race motocross when I was a kid,
right.
But I never got over a 125 because I was, you know, it's just a height thing.
Right.
And then...
yeah, you're not a particularly big guy.
No, I'm the national average. I'm 5'9".
I'm
a decent size, but not on a 250 where you'd have to get on milk crates to get on the thing to do the actual ride. So then I took the MSF course, the Motorcycle Safety Foundation course,
right.
And did it at the Honda Colton Center, and they had a Sabre parked in the lobby. And the Sabre's gorgeous. It's got like the flowing lines that go back, and it's just a monster bike. It's great. It weighs about 800 pounds. And I was like, ah, this is a little too much to start on. Because I think they teach you on street riding on 250s or, you know, or three.
Right.
You know,
it's like a 250. Yeah, it's like a Rebel or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And so, or like the 400 automatic, kind of the one Prince rode.
Right.
Which is true.
That windjammer thing.
Yeah, totally. So, but I would look at the Sabre and I would go like, I would love one day to be able to ride one. But that looks like a monster. I can't imagine. Got on the Shadow. I was like, this is crazy. After a couple of weeks of riding the Shadow, I was like, this is actually okay. And it started looking smaller. Psychologically, it looked like a smaller bike to me. And I was like, okay, I think I could step up. I really want to ride the Sabre and just see what it feels like. And so they loaned me one to ride. And I was like, this is sick. It's a great bike. And so I'm riding it around all over the place. And at one point, they needed it back because it was a special one. It was painted, and they were using it for an event. And they're like, we need the Sabre back if you don't mind. I was like, I like it.
Do you think maybe you might be able to talk them out? Like, hey, you know,
yeah,
this,
you know,
really...
this feels really good. I'm going to the Avengers premiere. Yeah, maybe I could ride it to the... Yeah, right. So that kind of thing. And so they actually said, well, if you want to try the Fury... And I was like, I don't know if I'm the Fury type per se, because riding a chopper, it seems like I'm trying too hard, whatever,
right.
You know. And it was an orange one, this burnt orange one that they have. I'm like, wow, you guys are just swinging for the fences. You want me on an orange chopper?
Right.
I got on the thing and I was like, this is incredible. This is even better. And it was more stable, interestingly enough, than the Sabre. I thought it would be less stable because of the rake and because of the thinner tire. And it's not. It's just, it's you know, it's amazing. So so that's what I ride now. I ride a Honda Fury, the 2012. It's the red and black one, matte black and red. And I call it the end of the world, the 2012.
It's your Spider-Man motorcycle.
Exactly.
Nice.
It's just, $20.99, Spider-Man $20.99.
Oh, almost the Venom outfit.
Yeah, which is what they're basing the new outfit on. But then now we're going to nerd off into comic books. cover every...
my protractor is erect.
By the way, go see Avengers because it's sick. It's a great movie.
Oh, somebody saw it before everybody else.
Mark Ruffalo is the best Hulk so far, and I liked Edward Norton as the Hulk.
Mark Ruffalo looks like he could be your bigger, thicker brother.
It's true.
You guys look very similar. Yeah.
But he's actually terrific as the Hulk. He's the most interesting Bruce Banner I've ever seen.
Well, excellent.
And I like Bill Bixby.
But can we get on the list of everything that you do?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Actor, writer, stand-up comic, talk show host, comic book nerd, music fan slash aficionado, pop culture slash fan aficionado slash expert, musician, guitar player, singer, motorcycle rider. What else did we leave out? Magician.
Martial artist.
Really? What's your discipline?
I started in Kenpo, karate, got my black belt when I was 16, then went to Taekwondo, and then I went to Kung Fu Sansu, which is sort of akin to Krav Maga or MMA sort of style fighting. Got my black belt in that in 92. I've been doing Wushu since 91, so... probably 20 years.
So when they bring back Chips, you are perfectly set up to be Poncherello.
I am. I absolutely.
Because you can do anything. Hang gliding, pop wheels, roller skates.
Exactly.
You're ready to go.
I could slide under a truck and be in the hospital for the rest of the episode.
That would be great.
I actually injured myself.
But you'll have a great smile.
It's true.
That's all that matters. Hal Sparks is in town.
Great.
Tempe Improv. Thank you for coming by, man, and spending an hour.
Yeah. A great conversation, though.
Yeah, we had a good time.
Yeah.
This is good. Can we do this again next time you're in town?
I insist.
Cool.
As a matter of fact, I'm back here... we're back in the fall.
Now, open your iPad. You keep notes on everything, don't you?
We're back in here. I think it just got booked, so it wouldn't be in there.
I'm going to check my iPad here. I can't believe I'm opening up my notes.
Captain's log, stunning. 29.9. I feel like I should talk into my iPad. Every time I pick it up, I'm like, this is from the future.
That's what I tell everybody. I'm like, your tricorders are real.
Yeah. They actually have a... I can't. There's too many dates here.
Right.
I wouldn't be
able to. I'll tell you what. Stay in touch. We'll swap numbers and we'll stay in touch.
I tweeted Neanderthal earlier today. And for those of you who don't know, it's at Neanderthal is your Twitter.
Yeah, that's
my
Twitter handle. It's just twitter.com/Neanderthal at Neanderthal. We'll do it.
Yeah.
So
I tweeted you earlier. So we're already in line and we'll follow back and DM.
That's
so we can
awesome.
Keep in touch. It's
that's great. Hal Sparks, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
You're
thanks for playing the tunes too. That was a really nice extra touch. And by the way, and like I said, it's all stand up this weekend. It's just me speaking. And I think it's the pure act of stand up is what I really enjoy when I'm doing it. So I don't. Yeah. So come on down.
A clean show? Profane show?
No, profane show.
Very profane?
Yeah. I'm on a Disney show, but that's the only place where I'm clean currently. This is the real stand-up.
And if you're interested in Hal's music, 01, you can find him at ReverbNation/01. Yeah. It's the word zero, the letter, the number one.
Yeah.
And you can do that. All right. Well, Hal, thank you, man.
Thanks, Paul.
All
absolutely.
Right, man. I'll talk to you in a bit.
Rock on.
Bob?
Bob
from Havili.